Okay, so as we've been going through, reading through the Bible in a year, today we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And I just wanted to make a mention to you about the video series that we started on Friday, and I'm hoping you received that. If you did not receive it, let us know. We'll make sure to get you on the list. And on that, I am asking for a clue each time, and it's an the first one, I made it very clear that it was an obvious clue. It was an obvious one, and so that's just getting into the practice. So I don't want anybody to watch that video and go, well, this is all it's going to be. No, trust me. It's going to be tough this week. This Friday is going to be a very tough clue. Man, I got some good reaction over here for that already. Looking forward to the tough clue, are you? Looking forward to it? Yes, okay, I thought so, okay. And as we say in that, you know, if you get all four correct, you're gonna put your name in a drawing and all that for a gift card that we will give to you. So some of you might be out there going, oh my goodness, I meant to respond to that email and I forgot. Hey, you know what? We believe in grace around here, okay? You still have time to send the first one in if you haven't got to it yet. Send it in, reply to the email, and it doesn't matter who you are. Some are asking, well, is it for these people? It's for everybody who got the email. Go ahead, just send it in. We'll put your name in the drawing. We did get quite a few responses, but I just wanted to put a little push out there. And also, if for some reason you get the first one incorrect, that does not take you out of the running. We still believe in grace, so if you continue and if you get the next three correct, then we'll make amends and we'll see what we can do. We try to work with you on that. You see what I'm getting at here? The biggest reason why I'm doing that is... anybody know? Well, for the glory of God. Maybe you forgot about that. But no, it's to make sure you actually watch the video. That way, I'll make sure you have to go through to actually see what the clue is. Okay, so today, we're coming up to the end of this year and reading the Bible in a year. Here in December. And this has been a fascinating time. It's been an amazing time that we have gone through so much since January in covering the scriptures and covering the Old Testament to the New Testament and now coming up here in Corinthians. And we actually end in Revelation, which is going to be very exciting. It's a very powerful book, a very powerful passage we're going to be ending with here at the end of December. But 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it says this. Now I make known to you, brethren, the gospel which I preached to you, which also you received, in which also you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. I asked the Bread and Soup clan, I do call them the clan, I asked the Bread and Soup clan on Friday this question, and I'm going to pose it to you as well, and this is what is called a rhetorical question for the most part. If you don't know what that means is, the question is just for the purpose of me asking, it's not for the purpose of me hearing your answer. That's what a rhetorical question is. So basically I was asking the question, have you ever been part of what you would call a bad church? We had a few people raise their hands, and I said, I hope that's not presently. I hope that's not what you're saying right now. But the reason I say that is I want you to think about the worst church you could ever imagine that you've heard about or that you were a part of that you said, that's just not right. I can't believe a church, that, whatever it is. Get that in your mind. Multiply that by about 5 billion, you have the church at Corinth. That's how bad the church at Corinth was. When the main issue that he was dealing, one of the main issues he was dealing with was sexual immorality. Specifically, he was dealing with incest amongst the church leaders. So we're talking about a pretty difficult situation, right? Talking about a pretty difficult church. And that's why Paul's writing. And when he gets into chapter 14, he's talking about how you are to conduct yourselves in worship. And the reason he was going there was because they lost all sensibility when it comes to how they are to worship. Because they were letting so many other thoughts and ideas infect the church. Paul wasn't there to manage it. And they were letting high priestesses come in and speak in tongues that weren't even godly and causing a lot of friction amongst everybody. And So in chapter 14, Paul's saying, this is how I want you to do it. If you're going to speak in tongues, this is how we handle it. If there's going to be an interpreter, there only needs to be this many people interpreting. And if not, then this and this. And he starts off at the beginning saying, well, you know, tongues isn't the most important, but if that's what you want, and he goes through that idea. And then he closes it out by saying that we have a God that believes in order. God is not a God of disorder. God is a God of order. And why is Paul saying that? Well, Paul's saying it because pretty much the church at Corinth was at the extreme. You know, we have some teachers here, whether it's a church, Sunday school teachers, or public school teachers, or whatever. We also have school bus driver, one school bus driver I know of. I don't want to call her out by name, but she's sitting in the back, and she always says something in the middle of my message, and she's kind of rolling her eyes right now. But anyway, we have one official school bus driver. So I know that there's this, and I think parents get to that level too, where you know, there's certain expectations that you have as a teacher with the students and so forth, and this is what's going to happen. But I've realized that just about every teacher, every bus driver, every parent, every person of authority has a breaking point, right? Enough's enough. I'm not gonna try to be your friend anymore, right? That happened to me in a pre-algebra class in high school that I was taking. And I know that you're thinking, well, you were part of the class, so you had to be the problem. And maybe I was, I don't know. I don't remember exactly. But I remember it was the last day, the last class that we had, and it was a Friday. It was a new teacher. It was only about 2 months we have been there. I think it was October. It was a Friday, and we were watching the clock, ready to go out, waiting for the bell to ring so we could run out and get on the bus and get home. And out of the blue, the bell rings, and he screams, he goes, "No! You guys are standing right here!" Slams the door. And we're all going. And he goes, "I told you at the beginning, if you give me a hard time, I'm giving you a hard time. I'm not putting up with this anymore." And we're going, That's a little bit like what Paul's doing in chapter 14. He's kind of had enough. He's kind of reached the breaking point of, okay, I've heard this ridiculousness from you guys, enough. Let me explain, okay? God is a God of order. When you worship, this isn't going to happen. When you worship, this should happen. If you're going to get involved with the gifts, this should happen. Prophecy is more important than tongues. And if somebody prophesies, this is what I want to happen. If somebody speaks in tongues, this is what I want. And everything has to be, why? Because Paul reached the point of, these guys, they needed some severe correction in coming in and saying, this isn't godly. God is not honored by this, and this is not behavior that is pleasing to God. Any teacher out there, parent, ever have that moment? Enough's enough. We're done. No more. I mean, come on. Anybody here ever been in a classroom where the lights were turned out? Remember that? Anybody ever have, why don't we all just put our heads on our desks? Ever have that one? That's when the teacher reached it. Enough's enough. We're not doing this anymore. Someone over here is really nodding. I don't want to point her out, but she's really nodding over here. But when you reach that breaking point, you reach that point. That's where Paul was. That is the segue or the intro or helps us understand why he kind of makes this shift in chapter 15. Chapter 14, it's all about order. You guys are crazy. This is nuts. God, this is not pleasing behavior to God. And then he moves into chapter 15, and what does he say? Now I make known to you, or I remind you, I want to remind you now that we have all that taken care of, now that we have the order issues done, now that I've already told you what's pleasing and what's not pleasing to God, now I make known to you, brethren, the gospel which I preach to you. Like, in other words, did you guys forget? The gospel which I preached to you, which also you received, in which also you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. That's a lot of words, isn't it? And did you notice the theme of both verses? It's nothing but the one word, gospel. Everything has to do with gospel. I make known to you what? The gospel which I preached to you. Well, what is that gospel? The one you received. What else is it? The one you stand in. The one you are saved by. He lists this whole thing. The gospel was preached to you. You received it. You stand in it. This is the one by which you are saved. Then he throws this condition at the end. This conditional response. You know, you see conditional responses a lot throughout Scripture. And I think we forget about them sometimes. Because I think we can take ideas that, well, God's gracious and God's loving and God's forgiving a little bit too far sometimes. Because just take 1 John, for example. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us. Notice the conditional. If. What does that mean? If you do this, he will do this. It's not the idea of, well, God's a forgiving God, so everything's just forgiven. No. If you confess your sins, and so we have conditional responses. We even have it in the Old Testament. In Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 7:14, what do we have? The whole idea, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Well, how's that going to happen? If you do this. It's a conditional response. That's all throughout Scripture. This one, what does he say? He says, I want to make known to you, brethren, the gospel which I preached to you, which you received. You also stand in it, by which also you are saved. If, conditional, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you. If you hold fast. It's almost as if teachers do this as well, right? He's kind of implying that some of them may not be doing that. He's not making an assumption. I mean, he's kind of like saying, you know, from what I see, don't you remember the gospel which I preached, which this, and you should be standing in it. It's your salvation, everything else. It's almost like he's saying, I really shouldn't have to write this letter to you at all. Unless you didn't accept what I said in the first place. So he says this, he says, if you hold fast. So I want you to think for a moment what you think it means to hold fast. And I remember, and all of us do, we all remember when cell phones first came out. And it took us a while to finally be able to afford one to get our first cell phone. It's amazing to even say that, isn't it? You know, now with everybody has one. But way back when, for those of you who don't know this, there was a time when it was only the extreme wealthy who would have one, and they were about this big, and they had a cord that plugged into the cigarette lighter of the car. They would hold it up, you know, driving down the road, like almost two hands to hold it, you know. They kind of look like, to me, they kind of look like the Tonka trucks kids play with, you know, the gold and black, you know, that's kind of what it was. Remember the first time cell phones came out, and I don't know why this happened with me. This even happened before I even had my first smartphone, which only just happened just a few years ago. But from the beginning, if I had my cell phone, I always wanted it clipped to me. Always. And you can ask my family, you can ask Miranda, you can ask everybody that when I used to do that, especially when those clips, I found this thing, and I didn't do this on purpose, but from time to time, the clip would break. I would get a clip. The first time it broke, called into Verizon, and I said, yeah, the clip that came with the phone, it broke. Oh, you're still under warranty, so we'll send you out a new one. Oh, thank you. So they sent me out a new one for free. 6 months go by, breaks again. I call them again, and they go, well, the one we sent you is not out of warranty yet, so you can continue. So here's a new one. I don't know, what is it, 7 or 8, I think I finally got sent to me, something like that, because I guess that does say how clumsy I am in some ways. But I always wanted it, and I remember somebody trying to get a hold of us at one time. This was several years ago, and they said they were trying to get a hold of us, and we talked to them afterwards when they finally got a hold of us because somebody called me to get to my wife. Has it happened to anybody, other spouse here, where they call you to get to the spouse? And when we talked to them afterwards, they said, well, we tried Miranda, but we knew how she treated her phone. And they said, but we knew that if we called Chad, that he holds his fast to himself. That's what they said. That's what I was known for. Holds fast, which means it was always with me. And you know, we've talked about this before, you know, some of you grandparents, I watch some of you grandparents and sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? But you guys can do whatever you want. You're grandparents. I'm not going to say anything, but you know, I see you give your grandkid that phone and I'm going, what are you doing? And they're playing on the phone and my kids don't even know how to open my phone. They don't even see my phone. I mean, if they do see it, they have no idea. They've tried to guess at how to get into it. They can't. I have the different tricks of how if I'm the one looking at it, it's the only way it's going to be able to get open. And because it's so fast to me. So it's very difficult to pry that away from me anymore. Anybody else have that issue? Like your phone kind of has turned into another hand. Right? You don't leave the house without it. It's always there. It's always clung to you somehow. And, you know, your whole life is, that's what they want. They want your whole life on your phone, by the way. Apple and Google, I think, got together and had a meeting and said, we want them to have their whole life on their phone. Okay, so, well, it makes calls. Okay, now we got to make sure they can text each other. Okay, let's add email. Okay, let's see. What about a camera? Let's put the camera business out, and let's put cameras on the phones. Let's put documents. Now people can write documents on their phone, and they can save it, and they can transfer it to their tablet, transfer it to the PC, and let's just make it so that their entire life is on their phone. So if they forget their phone, guess what? They forgot their entire life. Or if they lost their phone, guess what? They lost their entire life. Anybody ever try to set up a new one? Is that fun? Anybody just get to the point where you're kind of like, you know what? It's not worth doing this automatic seamless transfer. Let me just type in the contacts myself. It would actually be easier, right? Because they always say, just press a button and it's done. And it gets complicated, doesn't it? But that's kind of what he's talking about here, that the idea of salvation, the idea of the gospel, that if you hold fast the word which I preach to you, which means you don't lose it, you hold fast. It's a part of you. It doesn't go away. And that's the conditional response to experience the gospel. So here's some ideas of the Greek word that is used for hold fast. And the way that it's used throughout Scripture is very interesting. Luke chapter 4, verse 42. When day came, Jesus left and went to a secluded place. And the crowds were searching for him and came to him and tried to keep him. That's the word, keep him from going away from them. Luke 8:15, but the seed in the good soil, these are the ones who have heard the word in an honest and good heart and hold it fast, same word, and bear fruit with perseverance. Luke 14:9, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this man, and then in disgrace you proceed to occupy the last place. Occupy is the word. Here's a good one. Romans 7:6. But now we have been released from the law, having died to that by which we were bound. That's the word. 1 Corinthians 11:2. Now I praise you because you remember me in everything and hold firmly to the traditions just as I delivered them to you. 2 Thessalonians 2:7, for the mystery of lawlessness is already at work, only he who now restrains, that's the word, will do so until he is taken out of the way. So what does this mean in the Greek culture, in the Greek text, when he says to hold fast? It's the same idea when they wanted to keep Jesus with them. How do you think they wanted to do that? Do you think they were just saying, hey, Jesus, is there any way you could stay? No, it was, Jesus, we need you. Jesus, see, this is a serious idea of holding fast. This isn't just, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. It's a serious holding. It's a part of me. It's my life. And he's saying, this is, if you could possibly understand what I'm saying about the gospel that was preached to you, that you stand in, that saves you, if you hold fast to what I preached. Now, think about that for a moment, because, you know, we have beliefs and we have theology, we have understandings, and we have different things that we believe in, we have different things that we don't believe in. And it's always been amazing when we ask people from time to time, do you believe in God? Do you believe in God? A lot of times you'll get a yes. Sometimes you'll get a no, understandably, but sometimes you get a yes. I've had it said to me before, well, I believe in God and everything. I just don't believe in it like you do. Well, what does that actually mean? Now, I really want you, what is that? What is that? Well, I'm not a fanatic. I'm not, I mean, I believe in God and everything, but I'm not a fanatic. And I've had time where people have let me, and a lot of times they don't, but if they let me, I'd like to go further with that question. I say, okay, so you believe in God? Yes. Okay, so that first question. Is the God you believe in the God of the Bible? Well, yeah, okay. So if the God you believe in is the God of the Bible, then you must believe that God created everything. Yes. Okay, so if the God you believe in is the God of the Bible and you believe that God created everything, then you also must believe that Jesus is God. Well, since you put it that way, okay, yes. Okay, so if you believe that Jesus is God, then you must believe that we must obey what Jesus says. Well, I guess, because if you believe in God, somehow we separate our behavior from our beliefs, don't we? We separate, well, I believe in God, but it doesn't mean I have to do anything about it. I mean, I know he exists. I don't have to. That's what he's after here. That's what Paul's after. This isn't a casual Christianity he's talking about. This is a, hey, this is, you are holding fast to this belief. You are holding fast to what you have heard. You are holding fast to what he has preached. You are holding fast to the gospel. And then he continues on. He says, by which you also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. Man, I hear a teacher's voice in that one. Unless you're not telling me the truth. Unless you believed in vain. Because if you believed in vain, then obviously it wouldn't have the same impact. And if you look at the idea of the Greek word that he's using there for vain, we have some examples of that as well. Romans 13:4, for it is a minister of God to you for good, but if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. That's the word. Vain. Nothing. Galatians 3:4, did you suffer so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Galatians 4:11, I fear for you that perhaps I have labored over you in vain. Then we have Colossians 2:18, let no one keep defrauding you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of the angels, taking his stand on visions he has seen inflated without cause. Without cause is in vain. So basically what he's saying is, unless you believed in vain, which means unless you believed in, use those terms to help us understand the Greek, unless you believed in nothing, unless it was empty, unless it was not anything of value whatsoever, unless you believed in vain, unless your belief was inflated without cause. The Greek definition actually includes that, without cause. You ever done anything without cause before? You ever done anything where you just, somebody asked you, why are you doing that? You didn't really have a reason. It was just because. Well, there's got to be a reason. No, just because. Believing without cause, believing in vain. So here's the contrast that he's making here. Is the idea that if you hold fast, it's with you all the time. It's another limb you have. That's what this gospel is, that was preached to you, unless you heard it. And yeah, maybe you verbalized you believe in it, but it didn't mean anything at all for you and for your life. And nothing has changed, and your behavior has stayed the same. nothing has moved in any different direction as a result of what you have heard and as a result. And when he says that he's fearful with the church in Galatia, that I'm fearful that I labored over you in vain, that I came to you and I preached to you, but it was a waste of time. I had a discussion with someone here recently who was talking about the state of the church, and this isn't a doomsday message. I hope it doesn't come across that way, but about the state of the church. And he was specifically talking about it, the state of the church in the United States, and he was talking about the difference between the movement of the 80s and now, and this is how he said it. He said, the reason why things are so shaking right now, and the reason why things are so different when you compare the churches, church in general, not just one church or one denomination, and this was pretty much an expert talking. He said that back then, the church was in a state of revival. He said, look at it. You have Billy Graham preaching the Crusades. Every Christian event you would go to, every concert, Christian contemporary music, rock concert, whatever it was, there was always an altar call at the end for people to get saved. Every time. You could not go away with that. And he said that the church was in a state of revival. But he said the church isn't in that state right now. We're no longer in a state of revival, is what he said. When you observe everything, we're not in that. And he didn't say this, but this is what I came to my mind was, yeah, we're not in a state of revival. In some ways, we're in a state of survival. We're just trying to make it. We're just trying to keep our head above water because we're being attacked everywhere we look. Our fundamentals are being challenged and scripture's being attacked and all of that is happening. So what's the answer to that? What do we do about that? We hold fast the gospel that is preached. We don't believe in vain as if it's nothing. We hold fast. Many of you are aware of our ministry we have in Swaziland that we've had there for several years. And, you know, we talk about that in our culture, and I would agree with that it is true. The church does have issues, and we do need to hold fast to our fundamental beliefs because they're being shaken and attacked everywhere we look. But you can multiply that by about a million again. And when you go over to Swaziland, as far as them being able to survive as a church and them being able to survive as Christianity in that culture, because even before COVID and before the political unrest that was happening, or that has been happening, which has really affected the ministry over there in many ways, that talk about the church being in a state of survival, talk about a church just trying to keep their head above water because of the theological confusion that happens where you have Christianity that is taught over there, and they mix it with the ancestral worship and all of that. And that was before all of this happened with COVID and civil unrest and lockdowns and everything else. So they are definitely in a place now of survival. And I say that because I'm going to show you a quick video of that's going to explain about Timbali and what Timbali is and what they're selling out here in the foyer. And following that, Ken Rosenberg is going to come up and share a few thoughts and give you an update on the ministry we have in Swazi.
Timbali Crafts is an income-generating project for rural women in Swaziland. Most of the women that work with Timbali have either been widowed or abandoned. A lot of them are single mothers raising lots of kids. A lot of them are raising children that aren't their own biological children. Grandmothers that are raising grandchildren that have been orphaned because of HIV/AIDS.
I think we are all blessed in the Timbali Craft because now we are able to pay school fees for our children as women, because a lot of us are single parents and we are now supportive to our families.
We supply all the materials that they need to make the bags. We purchase fabric available at the market, the typical African fabrics here. And then we've helped them to be able to buy their own sewing machines. So we have a payment plan where we buy the machines up front, and then little by little they're able to pay it back.
I learned how to sew because at first I didn't know how to sew. I didn't know how to use a sewing machine. Timbali Crafts helped me to use my hands, to be creative.
We meet once a week to cut fabric, and then the ladies take home all the pieces they would need to complete a bag and either sew it at their homes or at their care points.
The women of Timbali Crafts are very hardworking women who were already giving to their communities, cooking at different feeding centers for many children every day. Some of the women of Timbali Crafts walk up to 2 hours just to get there every Thursday to cut fabric and pick up their materials for sewing that week.
No two bags are really alike. There's always different styles, there's different colors. They keep improving their fabric. They're adding different flares to the bags. There's table runners, there's pillow covers.
It's pretty amazing to think that there's 100 ladies sewing, and so that's 100 families that are affected by Timbali Crafts. And I think in a nation where women often aren't valued, the women of Timbali Crafts have been given an opportunity to do something of value, to be able to provide for their families. In many situations, if they didn't have this, they'd be struggling to put food on their tables. Their children wouldn't be receiving an education.
I appreciate a lot those people who are buying the bags because they are making the life easier for me. Now I'm able to feed my family and provide everything.
Good morning. I just want to be able to give you a quick upgrade on Swaziland. It's been a while since I've been able to do this, and I'm excited about it. When we got to talking about this, Janine mentioned, she says, you know, there are quite a few new families at New Hope that might not even understand how we are involved with this, how it came about. So I'm just going to give you a real brief description here. In early 2010, there was a missionary couple that came to New Hope Church and spoke to us about the dire conditions and the needs in their and life in their country. They work with a missionary organization called Adventures and Missions, which I'll refer to as AIM from here on out. And Adventures and Missions, or AIM, is based in Gainesville, Georgia. So anyhow, five people from New Hope, one of our pastors and four church members, traveled later that year in October to Swaziland to see if there was a way that New Hope could partner with AIM. And what came out of that is our partnership is the Anchor Center Care Point, one of the care points that AIM runs over there. Our particular care point feeds 250 kids, 250 orphans, most of them their one and only meal of the day. That's the way it started out. But today, our sponsorship also, besides the one meal a day, there's now tutoring going on after school hours at the Anchor Center. There's daycare. There's Bible study. There's basic medical care because we have a clinic on site. Of the about 10 care points in the area around us, we have the best well with the best water pressure, so many people walk a lot of miles to come get water every day. And there's a large community garden that was started that is just working out tremendously. I just got an update from them recently. They just have harvested everything vegetable-wise out, and now have planted everything in corn to have maize for later on. And we're soon to be starting computer training, of all things in Swaziland, computer training, that's awesome, and grief counseling. So there are 40 care points that AIM operates in Swaziland that feed about 7,200 orphans a day, and they're overseen by AIM but worked through sponsors like New Hope Church. Each care point has a shepherd who's received a lot of training because they manage, the Swazi shepherd manages the care point themselves. Since 2010, there have been 40 people from New Hope Church go to Swaziland on a two-week mission trip before the pandemic stopped everything. So let me just give you a little update on the COVID-19. Because the vaccine is still limited over there, Swazis are really very vulnerable to this new variant, Omicron. Travel right now is blocked from Swaziland, South Africa, and six other southern African nations. And this means no travel in or out of Swaziland for the foreseeable future. A little update on the violence, and it's a shame, but for hundreds of years, this has been a peaceful nation. They're one tribe. There's really no inner fighting in the country. But it's got to the point now that besides COVID, Swazis are now dealing with, they're protesting the king's rule. And unfortunately, the protesting is a lot like protesting here. Burning of buildings, some rioting, some roadblocks. The protesters are demanding more involvement in their government. And of course, the king, since he's the absolute ruler, you know, he doesn't want to give up control. And in some cases, the king's troops or armies have arrested, beaten, and killed some protesters. The internet access is totally controlled by the king. So he shuts down the internet and social media whenever he wants to try to control the protesters. They really need our prayers. They really need our prayers. So the Anchor Center. Janine and I had the opportunity in the middle of October to go to the first ever Swazi conference. We represented New Hope Church at that conference in Gainesville, Georgia. It was an awesome three-day conference, but one of the most awesome parts of it, we actually, and again, in Swaziland, where electronics of any kind has been very limited, we actually got to have a 15-minute FaceTime with the shepherd at our care point and a lot of the other staff at the care point. We got to see the new cooking structure. They walked around with their tablet outside showing us all the touring of the whole place. They were excited. We got to see the new cooking structure, and the electricity has now been run to all buildings. Both of those were funded by a couple here at our church. And we're just waiting for the electric company now to come in and hook things up because everything else is run. We also got to see the 200 chairs that were purchased recently by another church member, and those chairs are greatly appreciated. It sounds like a minor thing, but they're used to sitting on the cold concrete floor, and in the rainy season, it's the cold concrete floor with mud all over it. So trying to keep their school uniforms clean is about impossible. These chairs are really going to help out. I just want to touch briefly on the grief counseling. This is something that's fairly new this year. These kids see more death than any kid should ever have to go through, and it's mainly from the HIV. And this grief counseling program, it was started this last year, and it's run by the shepherds at the care point. They've received special training for all this. But they even, after going through an entire session, has to have debriefing because they hear stories from kids that just literally tear them up to hear. So the program will encourage children to share their experiences and help them cope with their feelings. Flip this over. The grief counseling is also part of the family strengthening program, and that's something new also, where the effort has always been toward the orphans at the care point. But now even family members, if there are parents in the household, you know, they're going to be able to participate in the grief counseling also. So anyhow, this just helps, all this helps the care points become community centers where Swazis can help each other. AIM's emphasis is on training the Swazis to be leaders in their communities, giving them leadership training and vision to look into guiding their own future. And then lastly, which you've already seen the Swazi or the Timbali Crafts video, this is another one of AIM's programs that got started. And these women, they need a lot of prayer right now too, because this has been their livelihood, making these things. And it's way too expensive to ship thousands of these product from Swaziland to the U.S. and pay all the shipping and stuff like that. So the way it's always happened in the past, those of us going over for mission trips left all our clothes behind. They would launder those and give those out to people. And now we got empty suitcases that we can pack full of product. And that wasn't just New Hope. It was other CarePoint sponsors did the same thing. Well, there has been almost no product out of Swaziland now for a little over 2 years. So they've had to shut down the website because we don't have the product to sell. And we're not getting product in right now. And for the foreseeable future, I don't know how long that's going to take to happen. So what you see out here today, we're going to have this today and next Sunday, is kind of our last opportunities to help these women out. And they really need our help because this is how they feed their families. This is how they send their kids to school. So after the sale next week, then product's going to get consolidated to another organization that's got a little more inventory and help kind of wrap this thing up. But hopefully Tabali will continue, but right now they need our prayers, and if you'd like, they need your help in your purchases. So thank you very much.